After we're done in here this evening, excuse me, Richard Packham will be presenting a special demonstration, and I think we have decided, because of the numbers have made it known that they're interested, will be in this room instead of up in the suite that we talked about before. And Richard, I'm going to let you go ahead and tell us what you're going to do.
In previous years at this convention, we have done a demonstration, quite abbreviated, of the endowment ceremony for those who had never been through it, or for those who wanted to refresh their memories, or those who wanted to renew their covenants, or find out what it was like before the major 1990 changes. We're not going to do that this year, but we're going to do something similar and related, and that is we're going to go through the important elements of the endowment ceremony, the signs, the tokens, the penalties, the pre-1990 penalties, and the 5 points of fellowship, which were taken out in 1990s, and at the same time demonstrate the Masonic signs and penalties and tokens that they were based on. It'll be about a 20 or 25 minute demonstration. We won't do it with the clothing because that'd be have to be the Mormon thing. And when Masons go through it, they go through it half naked. And so, you know, with the shoulder. I'll be explaining how that works. Do you want me to talk about the timing?
Yeah.
Okay. Because of my long history in the foundation, I now have the exalted position of being the timekeeper for the open mic. So I'll be sitting in this front chair down here, and if you would like to express yourself in any way, any non-blasphemous way, well, are we against blasphemy? Please come up and sit in one of the front seats here in this row, and then take your turn here at the mic. I'll be sitting in the first chair, and I will have some. I'll be timing you and let you know how much time you have left. I'll hold up a name card in case you want to tell your name, but you don't have to, and then we'll start timing you. I'll just hold these up unobtrusively until we get to the end, and then I'll hold up the stop card. And then
Heil Hitler.
Yeah. Right. All right. Any questions about that? All right. We're all anxious to hear your stories.
One additional note. Over here on the audio guy, if you do not want to be recorded on video and audio, you need to look at me, get my attention, and make some kind of motion. Yeah, this one works well across the neck. Perfect. But let me know. Otherwise, you're getting broadcasted. For those listening online, sometimes you'll get a blank screen and no audio. That's why.
And this is being live streamed right now. And if it proves as popular as it's been, like particularly last year, we ended up, I think, with a couple of hundred people, didn't we? Yeah. listening to it being streamed live. So that's... Matt has done a wonderful, wonderful job over the years of doing the recordings for us. He's not going to be able to continue to do this for us, so we're going to be needing a new person who has the techie smarts to do what he does, because this has proved to be a really valuable piece of what we do on this weekend. There are so many people who can't join us and are able to either listen to it live or listen and watch it on YouTube. Last year was the first year we put them up on YouTube, and they've had just really a lot of hits. And I think it's just a great way that we reach out to the world and let them know a little bit more about our lives as ex-Mormons. And I would like to remind you, we have a policy with the conferences that anybody who has made a presentation in the past to the conference or is doing one this weekend may bring books that they have written and sell them at the conference. So we have a few that have started up here, but by tomorrow morning there will be more. So those books are available, and you will deal with the authors themselves in the transaction. The foundation doesn't take any percentage of it. It's just between you and the author. So watch for those. There'll be more display tomorrow. Excuse me. And the authors that have brought books that are speaking this year are Charles Larson, Latane Scott, Lyndon Lamborn spoke to us last year, and he's brought some. And Bill, where are you? Lobdell, are you in here? Did you bring books? I don't know whether. Yeah, he's got his books too. So that'll be great. And these, all the books that we feature, we have added quite a few books to the bookstore that's on the foundation website. And there are going to be more. We've finally divided it into better categories, a little bit easier to get through them, depending on what the subject matter is. And we do get a little bit of a cut from Amazon. Each of the books has an Amazon link by it. And so when you buy through the website, we do get a little bit of a percentage of that. So that is helpful to the foundation. And I wanted to tell you, and it looks like already they're almost gone. This is a brand new book called Execution of the Penalty, and this is by Linda and Brent Flynn. Would you stand up, please? They brought these books for free, and there's two of them left, so there was quite a pile there. They brought them so that they could promote this book that they've written about their life in the church and their journey out of the church, and I've read it, and it's a great book. And so this has been put on the website also. So it can be purchased through Amazon. We're really, really pleased to have you here. It's really great. And I know they were here last year, but I didn't get a chance to really meet them last year. So with no further ado, we're going to turn the balance of the time over to what we call our open mic time. And this is just for you to come up if you want to tell us where you're from and just a little bit about your life in the church or out of the church. And it has turned out to be a thing that kind of really bonds everybody for the weekend. When we get to hear a little bit of each person's story, it really does add to the weekend. So as Richard noted, he's going to be timing you, and the only reason we do this is so we can give opportunity to all those who really do want to speak. And again, I'll remind you, if you don't want to be recorded, both audio and through the camera, let Matt know that when you come. One more thing? Okay.
I forgot to mention that I bring greetings to this group from the president of the African Ex-Mormon Foundation, Darlington Gee, who lives in Monrovia, Liberia, former Mormon missionary, who's working very hard to staunch the number of conversions that are taking place in Liberia. He's talking to Christian groups there and publishing articles in the paper. He wanted to attend the conference this weekend. He had the money to do so, donated by a friend. He went to the American Embassy to get a visa, which was denied. He was told later that the reason the visa was denied is because the woman who interviewed him was a Mormon. So, greetings from Africa.
Yeah, it's been quite a story with Darlington. He came home from his mission and almost immediately decided he had another mission to perform. So we've tried to support him as much as we could. All right, the time is yours.
What's up? Chris Zabriskie, Orlando, Florida. It's my second year. I'll have been out 4 years pretty much in a few weeks, so that's kind of cool. Not much to say, but hello, and just that I've been asked a couple times today what it was that actually got me out of the church. And my standard answer has always been going to the temple to get my endowments for the first time and seeing the dress, the robes, and going, what the hell? And but I realized it really started earlier than that, because a couple weeks ago I showed a friend of mine Ingmar Bergman's Winter Light. I don't know if you've ever seen it, 1963. It's really brilliant. It's about a Catholic priest who loses all of his faith in God over the course of a very turbulent afternoon. It's a really intense little movie. I highly recommend it. And I realized the first time I saw it was actually, they screened it at BYU, which I thought was kind of ironic once you see the film. And when I was a student there, I was a film student. And it was really powerful. And I remember it really starting to cause some serious doubts. And I think that was really the first time back in 2000 that I really started to doubt. And especially right at the end of the movie, the priest is talking to a crippled man. And he says, I don't get the church's focus on the death of Christ and his pain and his suffering and the atonement and everything. He says, really, that was only a pretty brief period of time. It was like 4 hours or something. And I'm crippled. I go through this every day, 24 hours a day. It couldn't possibly have been all that bad. And he says, what I think Christ was, the real pain came when he realized that he was alone and that he had been abandoned by everyone he loved and trusted, and even his own father and everything. That's really where the pain, I think, comes from. And I don't understand why we don't focus on that. And I was thinking about that, too, and talking with a lot of people today, just going, feeling alone, when you leave the church. And I think that's probably the hardest part, and I think that's what keeps a lot of people in the church, is just that feeling of, my parents didn't talk to me for a long time. I have a ton of family and friends that just I don't talk to. I'm grateful I have my grandparents with me, though. I think that's the hardest part. But this weekend, if you're feeling that way, you don't need to feel that way, because, here we are. We all understand. We all have the same thing in common. And that's pretty much it. I just want to say hi, and that's it. Chris, that's it. Yeah. Thanks.
I'm Richard Williamson. Please record this. Mel, wife of the president. We salute you, Michelle Obama. That's Jack and Daniels. Coke. And I did this a couple years ago, and that was my courage to get up here. My wife says, don't swear. As an ex-football player, Army guy, combat veteran, disabled combat veteran, I'm going to pull this off without swearing. Sitting next to me tonight was a woman who I kissed on the forehead when we talked about some of the struggles that we've had together, some of our depressions. Sandra Tanner lost her husband. You all know Sandra, Utah Lighthouse Ministries. Phenomenal. She has no idea how much she reminds me of my Aunt Dora, Doxy. That's an old frickin' Mormon name. Those Doxies pulled handcarts from England originally. Sandra, I love you. When I left the Mormon church, my wife and I, 25 years and a half married, that's an Army thing, one of the first things we did was we started investigating. Let's get a hold of this thing. We went to Sandra and we talked to her. We met Bill McKeever, actually, because Sandra wasn't there. It was on a weekend. We met Sandra later. We made an attempt to go back and talk to her personally. And I was fortunate enough to know somehow the World Union of Deists found out about my story about leaving Mormonism. You can read it if you want. Chad, our president, peer-reviewed my article before it was printed on the World Wide Web, World Union of Deists, deism.com, from Mormon high priest to deist, because I'm still one of those who believes in God. I'm not an atheist. Like Jefferson, Washington, Einstein, Lincoln, Voltaire, there's something out there that made this stuff happen. It happened on its own. And I'm not arrogant enough to say that it happened on its own. You can be where you want to be. But I remember talking to Sandra. And when I wrote that article, And when I listened to Holland's bombastic... Café de Mérida in Mexico, it means BS. She wrote a book, phenomenal. Singular thing to prove the Book of Mormon is totally dog manure. I got a bulldog, okay, she's beautiful. She weighs about 60 pounds. Chad loves her, Mel loves her, she's beautiful. She leaves these landmines in the field. That's Holland. He's a bulldog's poop. She's got one book, Joseph Smith's Plagiarism of the Book of Mormon, from the King James Version of the Bible. Is that right, Sandra? 297 pages. Word for word, side by side comparison, A, B, where Joseph Smith ripped off the King James Version of the Bible and created his Book of Mormon. For those of you who love The Sopranos, it means the days are numbered. The bottom line is that some of you are newer here. This is my wife and I's fourth anniversary here. Welcome. It's been a journey, believe me. The first time I came here, I was overwhelmed with the number of atheists. Sandra and I talked about that. She says, Mormonism sets you up for atheism. Mormonism teach you that if Joseph Smith and all this stuff isn't true, that all the other religions are false, you're primed with that. That when you leave Mormonism, boom, you fall into the abyss. I say, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Give the universe a chance, please. Look into the stars at night and say, that didn't happen by nothing. And whatever it is that made that happen loves you, and it puts you here. And you, like Rob Shively said tonight when I was talking to him, we are the luckiest people in the world because we know absolutely that all that other stuff is a bunch of nonsense. I love you, Pammy. It's nonsense. Find the love of yourself within you. Reach out to those around you and love them. Honestly, I believe that I'm a Christian deist because Jesus said one thing. And these two things hang all the laws and the prophets. Love God and love your fellow man. That's Christianity. End of story. All that other stuff is nonsense. Love each other. Be good to each other, and Godspeed.
I'm Donna Banta. I'm from San Francisco. I joined the church when I was 14 years old. I'm a convert, which makes me sort of an idiot, and I realize that. And I think that you need to make that admission before you... But I joined, and then I went to BYU, and I met my husband there, and he's here tonight. And we got married in the temple, in the Oakland Temple. And we went to the temple, and all of his family came to the wedding. And my mother sat outside the temple, and all of my best girlfriends sat outside the temple. And, you know, we got married. Fast forward about 8 years. And we were living in a suburb of Dallas, Texas, and with our two little kids. And we went to see my mom. She had just moved there to be near us. She was living by herself in an apartment near us. And we went to see her on a Sunday morning. And she didn't answer the door, so we knocked, and we finally went in with the key, and she was dead. And she was dead. And we didn't know what to do. Of course, we called 911, and the police came, and they said, well, do you belong to a church? And of course, we did, and we told them, yes, we're Mormon. And so the police went to the Mormon chapel and found the bishop. They sent some little boy that was out loitering in the foyer to go up and give the bishop a note, and they came, and they came to the apartment where she was, the bishop and one of the counselors. And the bishop was a very nice man. He was an engineer. And he didn't really know what to do, but he was very polite, and he said, and he noticed our kids were there, and so he said, well, can we get the kids a babysitter? And I said, oh, yeah, that would be great. Can you just take them? So he took the kids, he and the counselor, took the kids back to the chapel, I guess got the babysitter. This really nice Mormon girl came to our house. She took care of the kids, gave them baths, gave them dinner, all that stuff. They were in bed by the time we got home. And that was very nice. But I was still extremely distraught. About 10 o'clock at night, the doorbell rings, and it's the Relief Society president. And this is a lady who is very competent, very intelligent, very funny lady, but with nowhere near the people skills requisite for that kind of a job. And so she just came in and said, oh, gosh, I heard your mom died, and oh, my goodness, and so what are you doing? She wanted to know what we were doing, and, you know, I grew up in Southern California. We were taking her back to Southern California to be buried. And she wanted to know all the details, where the kids, what we were doing to kids and all this. And then she said, well, you're going back to Southern California. Will there be any problem getting your mom back there? And I said, I don't think so. I didn't know what she meant. Well, you see, if you drive, any of you drive to California, you know that they have these inspection stations where they check to see if you have any fruit or anything in your car. And she thought maybe I couldn't get my mom's remains back to California because of these inspection stations. So I said, no, I think we're okay. So she left. So, you know, that was that. And then the next morning we're getting ready to go, and I get a phone call. It's the bishop's wife, and she says, well, you know, Donna, the bishop told me to call you. I love how they call him the bishop and not their husband. But anyway, that's the bishop told me to call you. And he said, you know, I think I can commiserate with you. I think I can help you. I'm thinking, oh, thank goodness, you know, that finally somebody that can make me feel better. And she said, yeah, you know, I grew up in my family was, they were Mormon, but they were not very good Mormons, and they had alienated everyone in the ward, and I was the only good Mormon in the family. I'm the only one that went to BYU, my parents both passed away prematurely, and they were on drugs, and there was rehab, there were police, there were, you know, all this, you know, I don't know, you know, probation, restraining orders, you know, guns, all that, I don't know. And I didn't know what she was talking about, you know. I mean, now granted, my mom did have issues that led to her dying prematurely. However, it was nothing like this. And anyway, she didn't even know my mom. The bishop didn't know my mom. All they knew about my mom was she was not a member of the church. So I guess that was that. So we got on the plane, went to Forest Lawn in Glendale where my mom was buried. And my grandparents were very conservative. They were not religious at all, but they were conservative, traditional people. And, you know, somebody dies, you get a minister. So they called, went to the Yellow Pages, I guess, and got a congregational minister to come out to the cemetery. Very nice gentleman. And he did a few words by the graveside. And he said he had never met my mother, and he didn't know us, other than to shake our hands right there. That's when we met him. But what he said comforted me. For the first time, I was comforted. And it was such an epiphany for me that maybe spiritual, just the idea that this was a church, this congregational church, was a church that gave back to its members. They paid for this guy to be trained to know what to say to somebody when they lose someone. That they used, you know, the members donated money to them, and they used this money to help them, and not just them, but their community. Not like the Mormon church that just takes from the members, just takes, and doesn't give back. And that's what a cult does. And that was such an epiphany to me. Now, I wish I could say that right at that moment, you know, I left and, you know, never went back. But no, that
you know, that's it went on for years, and it was it's very depressing, and you all know this, that part of the story. But I think that there are reasons that people go to a church, and most significantly, you know, you at least want there to be some sort of meaning, and you want there to be a place to go where there's some sort of meaning lent to the very special and important incidents and events that happen in your life, the times of great joy and great sorrow, whatever. And weddings specifically, and funerals and death. And the Mormon Church absolutely sucks at both of these things. At least it did for me, you know. It ruined both of these experiences for me. So, anyway, that was years ago, but I think ever since then, I have felt like, you know, you bear your testimony, and it's I would always say, I believe, I think, and all this. But now I can say, I know that it's not true. It's a crock. And I'm glad to be here with people that think that.
Wow, I'm clearing out the room. How about that? Sorry, my name is Eric Davis. I'm terrible at impromptu speeches, so I prepared a few words. This is my first time here, and I brought my wife with me, and we're trying to experience this process together. So, thank you. So, in the words of our dear friend Jeffrey, now if I can speak, I'll try to do so. About 4.5 years ago, shortly after I married my wife, after a life of activity in the Mormon Church, I got bored. Dressing in a suit and tie, sitting in a pew for over an hour, listening to people I didn't know drone on about what they know never really appealed to me. Add to that the typical sacrament meeting parade of at least a dozen screaming, crying children, their mothers fighting to maintain control, fathers fighting to remain awake, and piles of uneaten Cheerios and M&Ms haphazardly strewn about the chapel, and the experience can be quite torturous. What is meant to be a peaceful spiritual event ends up more like the scene from Titanic, in which the ocean liner has just sunk into the sea and hundreds of passengers are now desperately flailing about in the water. Then, add 2 more hours of sitting in meetings or classes, listening to even more people share their wisdom with the group on the same topics that have been beaten to death for decades. Repeat this process nearly every Sunday for more than 25 years. Eventually, I had enough, and I decided I was no longer the least bit interested in participating in this endless, soporific cycle known as church. If I want to hear this stuff, I can do it at home in my tattered underwear just as well as in some great and spacious building in a pressed white shirt. After a couple of years of inactivity, I began to notice that I didn't feel any different not going to church than I did when I attended every Sunday. This impression piqued my curiosity, and I began attempting to find an answer why I wasn't having those spiritual guilty urges I had been expecting. As is all too common with most of us, questioning and researching was the beginning to the end of my faith. In 2008, I started a reading spree, which has covered almost every religious topic imaginable. I am happy to now say that I have something in common with Weird Al Yankovic when he said, "Stephen Hawking's in my library." I suppose that now means that I'm officially white and nerdy. In spring this year, I purchased a used book that's entitled Losing My Religion by William Lobdell. I heard that you were in the audience, so I wanted to thank you for that. In the chapter, The Dark Night of the Soul, I read so many things in there that spoke to me exactly the way I had been feeling for the past 14 years since my mission to Winnipeg, Canada. During that same time, I accidentally stumbled upon a number of websites that featured people who had become disillusioned with Mormonism and left the church. I studied some of the research they had done on church history and scriptures, and I sat stunned as I read page after page of information they never taught me in seminary class. Ultimately, it was the life and work of Joseph Smith, for me, that was the final nail for my church service in the coffin. I watched the transformation that took place in my life in a relatively short amount of time. I then thought about all the experiences in life that brought me to where I am today. The works of Bill Lobdell and several others that I read inspired me to write a few notes about my life and my thoughts on teachings of the church. I wondered, how many people have had as unusual experiences in life as me? Those of you living in Utah may remember the news story in July 2004 of a woman who went missing in Salt Lake City, and then later it was discovered that her husband had murdered her. That woman's husband, Mark Hacking, was my MTC roommate, and we shared two areas in Winnipeg together. Many of you may be familiar with the story of the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Harrison, Arkansas, where the Baker-Fancher wagon train originated, was my home for nearly 5 years when I was a child. You can imagine some of the news stories that may have been printed commemorating that event. Then when I was 10, my family moved from Harrison, following a very similar route, to a rural area of Utah, where we learned that the attitudes of local settlers had not changed much in 130 years towards the outsiders. The only difference seemed to be that strangers weren't being murdered anymore. As I jotted down more and more of my life experiences and began sharing them with a few people I knew, my wife suggested to me that my life might make an interesting story for others to read. So I sat down and began writing. And I started with this first line. In 1979, Davy Crockett, of all people, converted my parents to Mormonism. 30 years later, Joseph Smith, of all people, convinced their son to leave the faith. Thank you.
That's pretty tough to follow. I was, as you get closer, I'm kind of wishing that I had that Jack Daniels there. It'd help out a lot. My name is Brent Fisher, and I know some of you out there, this is my first time attending this conference. My wife is actually here, but she's very nervous. She's up in the hotel room. She's very nervous about this whole thing. You know, until now this has been pretty jovial, but I have to say it's been very difficult for me. And I think the biggest reason that it's been difficult is to watch the pain in my wife's life. In the beginning, she would come to me and she was just mad at me because this was obviously my fault. And no matter how many times I tried to say, "Why are you mad at me?" I'm the one who has found the disease. Would you be mad at your doctor for diagnosing you with cancer? Especially if it was a cancer that you could get rid of. It doesn't come across that way, though. I don't want to paint a bad picture. I'm just saying it's difficult. And many of you, I'm sure, know exactly what I'm talking about. I first learned about the church growing up, I never even had a stray thought about the church. It wasn't until I was on my mission and a fellow was walking next to me and my companion, and he just kind of walked next to us for about a mile, I think, because we had a pretty big area and bikes had been banned from the area. And we said, "Can we help you with something?" And he says, "I'm just out walking." We started talking to him, and this was in Colombia, so, you know, it's a strange kind of a thing. And he told us a little bit about why he had left. And it was because, you know, he had left Colombia, had gone to Rick's College as a youth, and found out that the Book of Mormon had been changed quite a bit from its original edition. And he thought that was kind of strange for being the most perfect book in the world. And my companion and I both thought to each other, yeah, that is a little bit odd. We had never heard of it. So we went back and we both looked at each other. And I have to give kudos to my companion, because he says, I think I would have just kept silent, as many of us I'm sure did for years. Kept silent. Kept yourself silent. Kept your smarter self from asking any questions. But he said to me, Brent, I feel really disturbed. How about you? I said, yeah, I do. And we called our missionary president that night, and he spoke to us for a while. And I forgot about it for must have been 10 years, maybe more, until I had a seminary class or an institute class where I was taught about the real origins of the Pearl of Great Price, not expecting to find the real origins in that class at all. I was able to put that on the shelf as well, and fast forward until just about 4 or 5 years ago, when I moved back to the valley from Phoenix, Arizona, and I just couldn't keep those things quiet any longer. And one, I knew that I could not do it anymore. So Colin and I went to IHOP just down the street from us, and I said, "How are things going between you and me?" She said, "Pretty good." I said, "Oh, that's good, because I got something I want to tell you." And she thought I was having an affair. And I told her, and she said, "That's it?" I said, "Yeah, that's it." Days later, it sunk in, and we just about... you had an accident on the freeway. We almost had an accident on the freeway when it sunk in. What was going to change in our lives? And it's been difficult ever since. And so I feel for every single person out there. I know it has been that way for all of you. And if I can talk to any of you about that, I would really appreciate it for me. And if you need someone to talk to, I'm here for you too. And that's all. Thanks.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chris Nelson. I'm from Logan. I think my story is probably a little bit different. I was raised, wonderful childhood, lots of music in the family, great parents, wonderful mother. My experiences have been as, I don't know your book, Bill, but I'm going to read it now. Because the dark night of the soul speaks out to me real clearly, because that's where my experiences have been. At the age of 12, I was assaulted sexually by a local police officer in Logan Canyon, and that changed my life, as it changed my my heart's pounding. Glad I had those couple of drinks tonight. Makes testimony meeting a lot easier. Yeah. It changed my life because of how I viewed figures in authority who were supposed to, you know, be telling me what to do and offering some sort of protection, you know, actually caused me to have feelings of inadequacy and guilt and self-loathing and things that my dear friend Lyndon talks about in his book, which has been wonderful for me. Thank you. Changed my life. In many actions that I took, I ended up being called in by the bishop at the age of 14 and told that he had come to realize that I was sexually active. And I said, "Well, yeah." He says, "Well, you need to tell me that you're willing to quit doing that and that you're going to try hard to quit doing that." I said, "Bishop, I can't tell you that's lying, and you know, I was taught that you don't lie, and I'm not going to quit. I like it. It feels good." I mean, I'm 14, you know, what am I supposed to say? Lie and go, oh, I'm sorry, spank me? You know, I don't know. I didn't know what to say. You know, and he proceeded to ask me a whole bunch of really personal questions, a lot of which I didn't have any idea what this word meant or that word meant or that word meant. Anyhow, neither here nor there. I was excommunicated at 14. It was read over the pulpit in sacrament meeting. Six people, couples in the ward became inactive. And there I entered into my dark night of the soul. Was assaulted again by one of my brother's friends at probably, I can't remember. It all goes into a blur. Have visited many addictions in my life. Been married three times. My third husband is just convicted of murder, life no parole. Been there, and I know pain, and I know humility, and I sometimes feel like, you know, maybe that creator, that source, that sun, that light, somewhat seduced me into becoming humble by creating humiliation in my life, and I'm really grateful for that. Tonight I would like to honor my mom. Who, at the age of 79 and a half, has left the church. Stand up! The years of mind control. Right on, Mom. And I'm grateful for the example that she's shown to me, for the best friend that she is, and I'm grateful that I can tell her, you know, Mom, I fight with cigarettes every day. I quit every other week. I can quit any time. I've done it 100 million times. I'm grateful I don't have to lie about that anymore. I don't have to feel guilty about telling my mom the truth, because she truly is my best friend. And I'm grateful for all of you people. May you walk strong on your path and always be true to who you are. Thanks.
This is very much an impromptu speech, and I'd like to think that we've already been welcomed to Fast and Testimony meeting. I'm Nate. I was raised here in Utah. I was raised in Utah County. My father's a retired Brigham Young University's professor. My family on my father's side goes back to the origins of the LDS Church here on this continent. My mother's side comes from England. And like some of my friends in here, I'm still in the Exmo closet myself with my family. No one else knows that I have decided to leave the church. My reasons are very, very simple for the most part. One of the things that I'm sure that many of us who have been either raised or attended many a sacrament meeting or Sunday school session have been taught is we chose to be here. We chose to be here on this planet. We chose to be here in church. We chose here to be here, these beliefs. And we have the freedom of choice. And as those of you who may remember the gentleman who came out from New York City last year who spoke on cults, we have the freedom of choice as long as you choose our way. Far too often, I would ask questions, well, why is it we believe this in Sunday school? Why is it that you believe this? And this person would answer, and the question would get dumbed down. And then that person would comment on the question, it would get dumbed down. And finally, after three or four people had gone through the propaganda machine, the vanilla machine, whatever you want to call it, I still like vanilla, mind you. And the question resembled nothing what I had asked. I tried to ask questions that were designed to engage in discussion, intelligent discussion. Why is it we believe the way we do? Why do you believe this way? You can believe any way you want. I just want to know why. And thankfully, I wasn't stoned out of the church like Socrates was.
But why is it we do these things? Why do we believe this? Why do you choose to follow this? And have you ever given any thought to someone else's choice to follow something different, follow a different thought process? With my fellow former Army friend out there in the audience, there is something out there. But how many, I heard a couple other whos in the back as well. How many of us have chosen to question God's existence in the universe as we have been raised to believe in the LDS Church? How many of us have chosen to ask, what does this mean to me personally? And of course, when some of us have asked that question, we're told, well, this is what it means for you. And it's your choice, mind you. It's your choice to choose this way. So I'm going to end my comments here by giving my own personal belief. I choose the freedom of choice. I choose to find my own path. I choose me in the way that I choose to find my personal relationship with the Almighty, the Everlasting Spirit, the great creator of the universe, whatever you choose to call whatever powers out there that you may or believe in or choose not to believe in, it's your choice. But that's me. I make the choice for me. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Terry Curtis. I know a lot of you probably do know my story, so I'll do this as quickly as I can. Mostly I want to say thank you. Oh, Jesus, I've got the burning in the boobs. I wish you were my mom in the pink over here. My mom's 85, and all she ever tells me is, I made the biggest mistake of my life, you know, and this is my favorite thing I say to her. Mom, what you think of me is none of my business. Anyway, quickly, 2.5 years ago in May, I finally, after 5 years of reading well over 100 books, nothing on the internet, nothing that wasn't church approved, came to the decision that the church was absolutely not true. I had 5 grown married children in the temple. All 3 boys served missions. And I had 18 grandchildren, expecting 2 more. But I told my husband 2.5 years ago in May, I do not believe this and I will not do it anymore. We thought our marriage would live through that. It wasn't a great marriage. I'm not going to pretend it was. It was difficult. We had nothing in common but the church, pretty much. So, but I thought we'd make it, and we made it about, I think it was almost a week, and then he came home from work. That was, I believe, a Wednesday, and the next Thursday he came home and kicked my little ass out. He said, you get out, I'm going fishing, you'll be gone by Sunday. I laid in that bed and sobbed and thought of everyone in the sun. I could kill myself. I truly wanted to die, and I do want to thank 2 people at this time. Chet's Butte came and got me, and he literally saved my life that day. And after that, I got to know Diane Ormond, who spent so much time with me to help me know that I wasn't under Satan's control, but that I really had discovered that the church was not true. And she never was pushy ever, but always supportive. Anyway, he came home from fishing, and I moved out for the summer, and I started going to Post-Mormon, and that's where I met a few of you the summer of 07. I lived away from home. And in the fall, he came to where I was living, and he cried, and he begged me to come home, and he missed me, and the kids missed me, and would I please buy him more garments, since I threw them all out, of course. And would I wear the garments again and go back to church? So I didn't miss him a twit, but I missed my kids because they didn't call me because Satan lived at my house, you know. So it was really, it was very difficult. So I just went home. I thought, okay, whatever. So I went and bought,
100 pairs of bottoms and 100 pairs of tops, really almost, because I do bulk shopping. That's what you learn in the Mormon Church. I thought I never want to have to go in there the whole rest of my life. I don't want to go in there. So I filled two drawers just full of this. I just threw it all in there. I put those ugly things back on, took off my nice, sexy underwear. Oh, I was not happy, and I agreed to go back to church. So for 1 year, I tried so hard to go to church. And the first month, I made it about twice. And the second month, we were down about once. And after that, I just could hardly go at all. I'd go to sacrament maybe once a month. And at the end of the year, it was October last year of 08, and I heard about this conference, and I really wanted to go. But I was really scared, and I called Diane Ormond, and I said, I'm really scared. I want to come, but I'm really scared to write this check, because he'll see the check to the ex-Mormon conference, and, oh, it'll just be horrible, you know. And I don't know, I finally just wrote it and came, and I had so much fun. It was just a blast. It was so supportive and so great to meet so many of you that had been through similar things. And, of course, I'd already told all my kids a year and a half before I didn't believe, so they were getting more adjusted to the fact that Mom is just possessed, and we're just going to live with that. But I also am not ever allowed to be alone with my grandkids, and the oldest ones are 13 and 12, and they still haven't told them, get this, that grandma doesn't go to church. And I said, if they ask me, I'm going to tell them. And they're like, no, don't ever tell them. I mean, they just live in total fear. It's just ridiculous. So anyway, I finally did resign, and so now they can just tell them grandma's not a Mormon, and they can do the lying, and if they want, say she never was. I don't care what they say. But anyway, I'm not the kind of person that really needs my grandkids in my life, so I don't hardly ever see too many of them, a little bit here and there, but, you know. I have a whole total great life. But when I came last year, it was just so great, and I went home, and this is the awesome part of the story. I want to say thank you. Because this last year has been the most painful and most joyous journey of my life. I went home on Sunday, on the Sunday that the conference ended, and on Monday night I said, let's have home evening, and I showed him Lyndon Lamborn's video, and Richard Packham gave me his hard copy of his talk. No, not Richard Packham, Ken Clark, about the Mormon lying thing. And so I told him all that, and I said, I just want you to understand me, you know, so we can stay married. Whatever, you know. He was like that excited. So that was Monday night. Tuesday night, I said, we are getting divorced. Friday night, we went to mediation. And 3.5 weeks later, on November 17th, I was divorced. And it has been such a joyous, happy, it's just been a wonderful time of my life. I've learned to dance, and I'm just having a ball. I go dancing 2 or 3 nights a week, and I decided I'm going to date 100 men if I ever get married again. And I've already dated 28, most of them once. And I just love life, and I love you all, and it's just so supportive. And I just say thank you to everyone that goes to this trouble, for those of us that struggled for so long, and it'll always be a struggle. My relationship with my children will never be the same, or my grandkids, but you know, it's okay, and it's worth it. That quote that they gave, it is worth it to take my own life back and live it, and I am a happy, independent woman.
Before I start, I just want to recognize that the women have been sitting on this side, and the men, we have, okay, all right, the women start coming over here, all right, those of you that have been through the temple understand what I'm saying, right? So, my name, first of all, if I'm going to be quoted, I'm going to come up here and defend myself. My name is Rob Shively. So Rick Williamson, Williams, right?
Son.
Williamson. We met 4 years ago for the first time, and we sat together tonight catching up. And anyways, I thought it would be good to come up here. This is kind of my anniversary. I have to tell you, my first conference that I came to in 2001 was taking place just around the corner from here. And I heard there was this reporter from the Los Angeles Times that was interviewing people that were, you know, willing to be part of his story. And I thought about that. I thought, You know, that would be good. And if I could do that, if I could muster up the courage to do that, that would be really good. I would really like to do that. And I was kind of nervous. And I think on the last day, on Sunday, I met with Bill Lundell, who I saw in Portland just a few months ago. He came through at Powell's Book doing a book tour for his new book. And I remember being very nervous, super nervous, and sat down, and we talked for a little bit. He asked me a few questions, and before, you know, my chest, you know, my heart was pounding in my chest, and when it was over, I go, "Why? That, you know, that wasn't that bad. It was, that was pretty easy. You know, I felt pretty good." And two or three weeks later, I sent him an email, and he gave me his card and had his email address. So I said, "Hey, Bill, you know, when's the story coming out?" And this was, the conference took place after 9/11, right? So this is about a month or so after 9/11. So there's a lot going on, right? So he sent me a response saying, "You know, my editor said this is not a good time. He said, you know, the story, you know, is shaping up really well. So the editor's holding it back, you know, until a better time." Well, I grew up in Southern California. I have a lot of family there. Maybe they're listening. I don't know. And I was living in Portland at the time, but I had a lot of family down there. My ex was living down in L.A. And I think December the 1st is when the article broke. And front page of the L.A. Times. I mean, the L.A. Times is, you know, one of the top two newspapers in the U.S. And probably one of the top, you know, three or four newspapers in the entire world, I think. But so here's this front page article, you know, losing their faith and more, or something like that. And and I'm quoted in the article, and I thought, holy, you know. And I was reading the LA Times online, and so I saw it that morning. You know, it was a Sunday morning. And I was like, holy shit, you know. I wonder if my family's going to read this, you know. About an hour later, I got a call from my ex. "How dare you?" You know, and she went on and on and on. I mean, she took such offense by it, you know. And I was just telling my story. I was just telling my story of leaving the church. It was about me. It wasn't about her. It was about me. And we'd been divorced for a couple of years at that time. And anyways, when Bill, you know, decided to come and to spend another weekend in Salt Lake, I guess another anniversary, I decided, what the heck, I'll come too, you know. So that's why I'm here today. And, you know, I really appreciate what he did, because his book is great. You're going to love it. You're going to really like to hear from him tomorrow night. He's a great speaker. He's funny. He's very informative. He's very smart. And I think Bill, you heard about the Catholic Church lost again, a big lawsuit, another big one, a huge one. So what he did really was just amazing. He basically took away a lot of the protection, a lot of the secrecy of the Catholic Church had been hiding behind for many, many years, and exposed them for what they really are, a lot of the leaders of the Catholic Church. And you're going to hear about that story tomorrow, and it'll be really interesting. Recently, my daughter got. I only got 30 seconds, so I'm going to say one thing. And if you want to talk to me, I'll talk to you later, because I only got 30 seconds. But I think the one thing that we have to recognize that a lot of us are dealing with is toxic shame. And I think of your recovery, you know, for Mormonism, religion. Especially a religion like Mormonism is really about dealing with the detrimental effects of toxic shame. And I think it's a long process. I think a lot of us are going through that. And when you grow up in an organization that basically says what you do is bad, and it really goes down to you are bad, and you have to basically figure out a way to repair yourself from that, some people get over that pretty quickly. Some people takes a long time. And, you know, just in closing, I saw a quote here, so trying to think of something profound to end on. This quote here in the program, I think is really important. I think it's really poignant, and it's by W.E.H. Lecky. And he says, "It's so much less painful to believe than to doubt." And I think that's really true. You know, whenever people that I meet are religious, they, you know, I always say, you know, if I could only be so lucky
to believe, because it would be less painful for me. But I think the journey's worth it, and I think the reason we're here is because we've decided to doubt, to ask questions, and you know, have fun and get to know each other, and maybe I'll meet you later.
My name is Arza Evans, and thank you so much. I am a retired economics professor, and the only member of my family who is not active in the church. Come from a long line of prominent family in Mormonism. I'm also the author of this book, and I hope that I brought enough of these so that every one who registers can have a complimentary copy. If you haven't got your copy, please stop and pick one up on the way out. If you got one last year, pick up another one for a friend or relative. Okay? Thank you. Thank you. I would just like to say a word or two about lying for the Lord that is so commonplace in the LDS Church. Here I have a newspaper clipping of Jeff Holland, who said this. It's only a sentence or two. I'll read it. "I want it absolutely clear when I stand before the judgment bar of God that I declared to the world in the most straightforward language I could summon that the Book of Mormon is true and that it came forth the way Joseph Smith said it came forth and was given to bring happiness and hope to the faithful in these latter days." Wow. I'm here to tell you that Jeff Holland knows better. I have lived in St. George for 40 years. Jeff Holland is from St. George. I knew his dad, Frank Holland, very well. And he set me down for 3 hours one afternoon telling me what happened after he was called to be the superintendent of the building of the temples and the churches in the church. He was over the building program in the church, Frank Holland, from St. George. He spent these 3 hours telling me of the corruption, the payoffs, the under-the-table dealing. When it came to buying a simple thing like an organ, the organ is $10,000 and $1,000 for me. He went on like that for 3 hours. He was a crushed man. Now, if he told me that, I know damn well he told his son that. Jeff Holland knows that. Now, anyone with I don't understand anyone who really thinks about the Book of Mormon. We have Nephi's spring steel bow 2,000-3,000 years before they invented spring steel. The Jaredites had steel swords 1,000 years before the Iron Age. We have perhaps the most ridiculous thing in the book are those Jaredite submarines. Okay, what were they made of? They were made of wood. And yet they could go under the water, and it says they were under the water much of the time. And what did they have? A hole in the top and a hole in the bottom for air, and they were filled with the flocks and the herds. Now, how would you like to be in a wooden submarine with a little hole in the top with a bunch of cattle and horses and sheep? For 344 days. Thanks, Richard. For 344 days. I think one day would probably be the death knell. I can't understand. You couldn't build a fire inside there. It would kill all the oxygen. There was no oxygen in there. And the stench of the animal excrement and the, it just is ludicrous. It is absolutely ludicrous. You know it and I know it, and yet they had flocks and herds. They even had fish aquariums. They took fish on those. It is just, if you want a good laugh, a better laugh, go home and just read that. That is ridiculous. And here is a man seriously telling 20-some thousand people that that is God's truth. He knows better. Thank you.
Thank you, Arza. It's always nice to hear from you. My name is Brent Train, and I'm a regular. I've been coming about 4 years, and I love it so much. I look forward to it every year, being here and seeing the people that you miss throughout the year, because it's so hard in Salt Lake to leave the church. A lot of times you do feel alone, but in this weekend, if you're here for the first time, enjoy it. Take it in, because you really do relate to people here, and they understand your struggles. I'm going through a thing right now where I want to relate to my military friend that's leaving right now. But I've met him many times through the conference here, and he talked about God tonight. I am having an interesting time. I was raised LDS, and I was very grateful for the teachings of God and Jesus in my life. For a while, I've left that. And, you know, you're always taught, well, you can only feel the Spirit of God and Jesus as you do what the Mormon Church wants you to do. I want you to tell you that is bull crap. It is just not right. It's false. And I'm learning so much. I'm now going to a different Christian church, and I feel God more in my life now than when I was in Mormonism. So it's just another falsity that they teach you, that you're not good enough, that you don't deserve Him in your life. I want to say that I do, and I'm grateful for it, and it gives me self-confidence again. Whatever you may worship as your God or whatever it may be, it's great to feel worthy and to have that in your life again. Thanks.
My name is Darrell Sturgis. It is my first time here, and it is a total delight to be here. As you might pick from my accent, I come from a land down under. So I've flown. The diagonal length of the Pacific to be here. I technically left the church when I was about 36. I accelerated up a ramp towards that departure for probably about 10 years before that. Got involved in the men's movement, which was a major part of my healing in the years after I turned 40. And I had a very interesting experience. I'd been on the organising committee for the Queensland Men's Festival in 95, and one of the workshops, I've forgotten the exact theme now, but essentially it was around intergenerational communication between men. And in broad terms, there were three generations. There was a reasonable number of men there that were around 60, sort of retirement age. There was a substantial group in the sort of midlife 40, 45 range, and there were some early starters at that point in time that would have been probably in their late 20s. And I remember very, very clearly as I walked out of that workshop out into the delightful sunlight of a mountain area behind the Gold Coast, Queensland's Gold Coast. And I was both elated and unbelievably angry. But I think of all the time and energy that had invested, that I had invested around being a worthy Mormon male. And I realized that in all the priesthood meetings I had ever been in, I believe I had never heard men communicate honestly. Incredible mountains of bullshit and mask wearing. And the most toxic of that mask wearing was around pretending that men were healthy and happy sexually. And my father was part of that process. You know, setting a son up with infantile questions around masturbation that were said more about his wounding than they did about his concern for me, and essentially set up a lose-lose situation. I either told him what he wanted to hear and was desperate to hear and violated my integrity in the process, or I told him the truth and kept my integrity intact and dealt him a blow and there would be repercussions. One of the key points and drivers of my leaving the church was to realise that Sunday was increasingly the most painful day of the week for me. That the level of discussion, the level of honesty, the level of intellect made me puke. And I compare that with the sort of discussions that I had with Jean and Sue over dinner when we were here early Wednesday night. And I describe Mormonism these days as so narrow, it's like looking through a keyhole with both eyes open. And by comparison, the sort of discussions that I so frequently hear are just so expansive. There's not the game playing and the platitudes. There are positions that come from vulnerability and honesty and the capacity and willingness to be intimate. The sort of intimacy that can only be founded in actually liking yourself in spite of not being perfect and loving the lack of perfection in other human beings. I'm delighted to be here. I'm looking forward to meeting many, many of you. I've had a great time so far. Thank you.
So I'm on video, right?
Yeah, you've got 110 people watching.
That's the right way to look at it, huh? I've been a member for about 40 years, married, young, had 5 children, and in January 2008, I was watching PBS, and they were doing a little thing on the Masons, and the Masons were showing their ceremonies, you know, and the things that they did that, and I was the only one in the room at the time watching this. And I thought, this has got to be interesting because, you know, the Masons don't normally show their secrets and stuff. And as I was watching them go through their rituals, I'm sure my jaw was literally laying on the floor. And I was pointing at the TV, which I was grateful that nobody was watching me at the time because it probably looked ridiculous. I was pointing at the TV and saying, no. I said, that can't be. And needless to say, that started me on a journey. I've read voraciously, and I publicly wanted to come up here today, looking forward to this day. I couldn't come last year. This is my first time. To thank Richard, Diane, and so many. Tal Bachman. It taught me how to think critically. It's a hard thing to go through when you're married into a big Mormon family. Don't get me wrong. I married into a wonderful family. They're great people, but they cannot look at their own religion with scrutiny. They just can't do it. They're incapable of doing it. I literally read hundreds of letters on the internet about people's exit stories. Every one I could find anywhere on any website possible, I probably read it, because I wanted to know what they went through and their stories. And as I began to talk to people and let my wife know I had these doubts, the same awful things that had happened to some of these people was beginning to happen to me. Like the previous young lady that was up here, you become the spawn of Satan. My wife literally thinks she's sleeping with the devil now. And on my way out here, my wife says, "Well, while you're there, why don't you pick yourself up a good ex-Mormon woman?" You know? Well, unbeknownst to her, I'd already had her picked out about a year ago. As I was sitting in my computer terminal, and the last nail in the coffin finally sunk in. And you're literally in tears. Because your fever finally broke. It finally broke. You were done. And you knew you were done. And I wanted to get in the car and drive straight to Utah and knock on Sandra's door and give her a big hug, because she's the ex-Mormon woman that I would pick. I'd like... You're a free woman now, right? I literally want to thank the people... That's right. You know? Boy, did my daughter's eyes get wide when I told her that was going to happen to her in heaven. Okay? She had not been taught that before. And that's another story. I can't tell you how much it means to these people that have volunteered their time and effort to put this together. You have no idea, well, you do know, how terribly alone that you feel. You think you're the only one in the universe that has figured this out. You're absolutely alone, you know? And you can't talk to anybody about it. And when you try, well, you know what happens. And the only thing I'd like to say is that there is absolutely nothing more liberating than shopping for new underwear. Okay? You go to the store and there's this plethora of styles and colors that you get to pick from, right? You know, and it finally sinks in. You are a free man to choose your colors for yourself. Okay? Again, I can't thank enough for Richard Pakman for running his website, for all the people that have contributed to the sites out there to teach people how to think thoughtfully and critically about these things. I've used Tal Bachman's stuff pretty well, where he teaches you cannot torpedo your doctrine in order to support the point you're trying to make for the moment. You cannot do that. And boy, it sure comes obvious in religious apologetics how that comes out in religious apologetics. So I don't know, I can't even tell you how grateful I am to be here. I've been looking forward to this for about a year and a half. And I read voraciously. I love seeing your stuff out there. And thank you very much.
This is my second year here. My name is Micah, for those that may know me, and I go by Mike Utah on many of the forums. A thought I had on the way up here today was that the truth does not need an apology. I don't know why that's hitting me like that, but we've been taught to cry all our whole lives, and now it's hard not to. What else was I going to say? Just my story, I guess, a little bit. Some of you have probably read it, may be familiar with it. I kind of left the church. I call it backwards because I didn't know why the church wasn't true. I just got into other ideas and information that just showed me that it couldn't be true, and that because it doesn't unify humanity. It does not bring us all together. Sorry. Because we are all one. We're one species. We should be treating each other that way, and all of religion, for the most part, is failing at that. I have to thank also this ex-Mormon Foundation. We came here last year as our first year, and I got to hear Stephen Hassan speak about cult mind control. And even though I was already out of the church at that point, I had basically deconverted myself from the church and converted myself into some of the New Age alien stuff out there. And I wasn't thinking critically about that stuff. And so I think the Eckhorn Conference last year for getting me out of that rut. And this last year has been the most amazing year of my life. I have come across more people who accept me for who I am and think critically and don't allow me to get into fallacious ways than I think I could meet in a lifetime. And I want to thank all of you for that. You're a testament to honor and integrity. Be who you are and stand up for what you know is true, and just live your life the way you want, because that's what life's about, is just being happy. And the other thought I had was the other day was, do what's natural to you and you won't go wrong, because that's who we are. We are nature, and that is God, as I understand it. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Shauna Lee Anderson, and it's hard to draw together all your thoughts into a few minutes, but just to be brief. Hi, Colleen. Glad you made it down. 2 years ago, my husband did some voracious reading, and it was when he finally told me where he was, because he's a person of integrity, and he wasn't going to hide this from me. He had to share it with me. I was absolutely devastated. And of course, put up all my defenses and talked apologetics. And I also, you all know the train of thought that goes up, which is, but surely Elder Holland would—he must know these things too, and still believe. Or surely Elder Irene, those are my two apostles of preference. But surely they know and believe. They have a witness of something. And anyway, what I wanted to share with you is that over the course of 2 years, as my husband backed off from trying to convince me, because when the more he'd push, the more I would put up my guard, when he eventually made the choice, can I love this woman if she can never understand me, if she can never accept what my new reality? And when he made the choice of, yes, I can, I'll sacrifice my desire for her and for our relationship, the beautiful thing that happened is that I could let down my guard slowly when I knew he wasn't trying to convince me or change me. And the beautiful thing is that over the course of 2 years, we could just start talking about things, and eventually I would be able to say to him, now, what was that you told me 2 years ago about Peter, James, and John, how that apparently hadn't happened? Tell me about that. And I was finally willing to go and actually look at that critically. And for me, that specific issue was the last straw. And so in May, the bishop who has always been trying to support me with my, you know, apostate husband, he had asked me to come in and, you know, just to see how things were going. And by May, I knew I had pretty much lost my testimony. And so I thought, oh my goodness, what am I going to tell the bishop? And I was able to just narrow it down to the one issue. If Joseph Smith did not receive authority by the laying on of hands upon Peter, James, and John, which is the authority by which the church runs its entire organization and every ordinance it performs, if he did not receive that, then all the church is based on then is charismatic spiritual witness feelings, which is what many other congregations or churches function on. Then we are no different than anyone else, other than we're just a group of leaders that have inherited some beliefs and evolved some beliefs, but no different. And so when I could come to that point where I could admit that to myself, I went and talked to my bishop, and fortunately he was a very understanding person. He actually has studied a lot of the church history, so he wasn't ignorant of all the things. And I just said, you know, Bishop, I can't consider myself a member at this point. I consider myself an investigator, because if I had not been born in the church and I was just someone being now exposed to these ideas, there's no way I would accept baptism today. I don't have enough certainty about this. And he said to me, well, I recommend that you investigate still in the church so you can have the Spirit with you. And I joked and I said, well, that's going to be a good experiment where I can leave and actually compare the Spirit. And like one of you said, God is generous. The Spirit is with us. And even for those who choose not to believe in God at this point, whose meaning is outside a belief in God, life is good. We enjoy meaning. We enjoy purpose. I enjoy many epiphanies, I call them now, or grace moments that are that my family cannot understand is real. That they think without the confirmation and without fulfillment of all of the covenants, you won't have that. And my last thought was one of the other things that helped me make my decision to leave. We formally left in July. Was the feeling that I had, which was, it is not my purpose in life to perpetuate Mormon myths. And and for a long time, I thought I would just kind of stay in the church and help reform the church. But I eventually realized I can't perpetuate myths. And when you're sitting there in Sunday school, you can't rock the boat. You have to perpetuate the myths by your silence, by your reticence. And our children are ages 12 to 5. They'll be free of this. And even though the pain of separation now, of the isolation or the leaving, has been one of the hardest things in my life because of the effect it's had on relationships and family and things. But as I tearfully told our children this summer, the pain that Dad and I are suffering in being misunderstood and being judged, you won't have to suffer it. It's going to stop in this generation.
Hi, everybody. I'm Donna Whiting. I don't know why I'm up here. I get really nervous, so this is really weird. I felt the Spirit, so I had to be up here. I guess I should start by saying I grew up completely in a Mormon household. I recited scripture before dinner. I, you know, just memorized all the prophets. Everything was really serious in my childhood. So we really tried. I married my husband, and we did a really good job of being good parents and, you know, went to the temple and had our church callings and all that kind of stuff. So we tried really hard. About 10 years ago, we were at a Manti pageant, and a man walked up to me, and he gave me a card that just said josephlied.com. And I remember I was just brokenhearted. I was like, oh, how could someone say this about Joseph Smith? It's just horrible. I honestly, I was like crying over this. It just bothered me for forever. It was awful. So everything went on as normal for about 7 years, I would say. You know, I did have a lot of issues, but I just, you know, put them aside as everyone does. And then maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, my husband and I were sitting in Gospel Doctrine, and they were having a lesson on Joseph Smith and the Kirkland Temple, I mean the Kirkland Bank and that whole scandal. And I just started just getting livid. I was just so upset, and my husband was trying to calm me down, saying, shh, shh, you know, don't get upset, because I was just turning red and just, you know, fidgeting, and I was just getting so upset. And I was just thinking, you know, Joseph Smith is an asshole. I'm like, why was he doing this to these people? It was awful. So I was really upset about that. And that went on, you know, a couple months later, you know, I was trying to process all this information because I had never heard that story before. And then I lived by the American Fort Temple. I grew up in Provo. I live by the American Fort Temple, and I was driving past the temple with my son. He was about 14 at the time, and he said, Mom, why don't you and Dad go to the temple? And I'm like, I don't know, because we were temple worthy, you know. We didn't have any problems, you know, meeting the criteria for going to the temple. That wasn't the issue. I just didn't feel like I needed to be there. So it really kind of woke me up and made me start really thinking about why we weren't doing that. And I Googled josephlie.com, and I think it sent me to the Ex-Mormon Foundation. And I'm sure most of you know, within 24 hours, it was just done. It was, it was like a light switch. It was so absolutely just over. It was just weird. I mean, that it, like a light switch. That's all I can explain it to be. And so I don't know how or when I brought it up to my husband, but he was really, really upset, and it was really difficult for us. It was a really rocky few months. And this is my third time here at the conference. The first time we came was when we were still a little rocky. And we fought the whole way up. We almost turned around a few times. But this conference really turned it around for us. It really made a big influence in my husband's, just with everything. It helped so much. I really thought he was going to divorce me before this happened. And something about being here with people who had been through it and understood what it was like, it just really was very healing for both of us. And I've got quite a few friends in the Pleasant Grove, American Fork area, believe it or not, who are ex-Mormon. There's a big community of people out there. And I try to get people to come, and everyone's like, oh, I'm over it. You know, I don't want to just dwell on it. I want to, you know, move on. And the way I feel about it is we need to represent and support the people who are new and, you know, kind of support everybody. Because it was really helpful for us. So I want to thank everybody who comes and, you know, all the regulars. It's really important, and I think we need to remember that the people that are new, we really need to be here for them and to show everybody that there is life after Mormonism. And honestly, we have never been happier. Our kids are doing great. We're doing wonderful. We're just very, very happy, and that's all. Thank you.
That's my wife. I told her I'd follow her up. I spoke last year and I was drunk. So I can't remember what I said, but besides the Jack Daniels and Coke, you ought to try Tom Collins. They're a good drink. But anyways, I did. I fought with my wife on the way up. You know, I grew up in a different situation as my wife. I grew up outside of the church. Well, I grew up in Provo, but my dad hated Joseph Smith. Sorry. Is that all right? I grew up outside of the church. My dad hated Joseph Smith, but I grew up right in downtown Provo, so I wanted to be LDS really, really bad. And so I struggled, and when I met my wife, I had long hair. I was trouble. her mom was just disgusted. But anyways, after we got married and stuff, I decided we had a child. I was going to do this, you know, and I gave in and gave 110% and became involved very intensely in the church and in the Elders' Quorum Presidency and all that crap, and played it perfectly. And then my wife, like I say, in Gospel Doctrine, had this thing, and I calmed her down, and then she came to me and told me all this stuff, and I did fight it, and I feel horrible to this day that I fought her on it. And one day I was reading the books that she had set aside, you know, and well, I should back up and say at one point she says, I will support you no matter what. I'll go to church the rest of my life not to lose you. And at that point I said, well, I should investigate what she's talking about. And I remember the day that it happened. It was just, I was just like, man, I have been fooled. You know, and before I go any further, I guess the video camera's not on. I wish my neighbors could see, but we're in Utah County, and last year I referred to it as the compound, which it is, you know, and we are happy. We are really happy. And I am one who chooses to stay in there and be an example to the non-Mormons, the ex-Mormons, whoever, and support them with all my heart. My neighbors are just baffled, you know, since we told the bishop what's going on and stuff, it's like they're peering through their windows wondering what's wrong with the Whitings. And we're happy, you know. On Sundays we go places and do things, and I spend my 10% on fun, you know. But once again, I'm also here, you know. I could choose not to be here, but I don't know how many people are here for their first time. Can anybody raise their hand the first time? There's quite a few people here. And I want to be here for you guys. You know, it's not the end. It is the beginning. It feels great. Even a year, 3 years later that me and my wife has left, I'm happier than I've ever been. You know, I actually answer to what I do. My kids are happy because of me, not because of the church. And so all of you are here. I welcome you, and thanks for being here.
We'll finish with you two, and then we'll be. Then I have a couple more announcements.
Just in time. How wonderful. I want to acknowledge a couple of years ago, I kind of discovered that I couldn't believe what I had always believed, and in fact became quite certain of that. And my wife and I were learning this stuff together, and we resigned from the church right away. I was like, I feel like I ought to get together with somebody, and someone was having a party in Provo. I was like, I guess I gotta go. And I did. It was so cool. Just we left, we resigned, and that week there was a party, and I met Diane Ormond, and I met Chad Spute and others, and started to form a new family. Later on in the year I heard about this conference. I was like, I gotta go. Of course I want to go, and so I did. I came to the ex-Mormon conference for the first time, and I'm sitting there, and they say, hey, you know, Sunday morning, there's kind of a business meeting for, you know, people that want to be involved with the ex-Mormon Foundation. Well, you know, I only had gratitude for that there were people who had already gone ahead and welcomed us with open arms into a new life. And when there was an opportunity to be involved with that, I was really grateful. And so what I'm saying is, for me, it was meaningful that people wanted to reach out and befriend people they never met, but who might share a common idea. And so I'm really grateful for that. And yeah, that's about it.
Hello, my name's Matt Strom. This is my first time coming. I'm a University of Utah student. I just transferred from BYU in the summer, so I'm loving Salt Lake City. I grew up in the church. I was born into the covenant, and I went on my mission to Canada. I don't know, there's something magical about Canada, but it was awesome. I love my time. I learned a couple things. I learned about some of the older signs and tokens while I was in Canada. That was one of the big things that made me investigate when I returned from my mission in October 2007. So I stayed home. I attended BYU before my mission, had loved it, and went back to BYU after my mission. And I investigated the church a lot. I really enjoyed Richard Packham's website and Post-Mormon. That was a big one. And lots of the other stories that everyone's been telling. And I didn't know it, but my father called me one day and he told me that he had sent in his letter of resignation from the church. And you know, then I have three older brothers, and we all started calling each other, and we were all really surprised, and you know, we were all saddened, but inside, I kind of found it hard to express my sadness, because I was investigating just like my dad at the same time, and my father actually didn't know I was investigating the church. And later on, in last October, I decided to call up my parents, and I told them that I was leaving the church, and that I would probably need to leave BYU because I kept the honor code, and according to the honor code, if you want to resign from the church, you have to leave BYU, and so I did. Good riddance. But I just remember back to all my times. I remember there was one particular time on my mission where I remember I was in a car with some of my other elders, and we were just joking around. We were talking about, oh, you know, one in every four missionaries leaves the church. Which one of us will there be? And there were four of us there. And I just remember thinking, man, I'm going to be the last one of us to leave. And I was the first. So, you know, I'm really thankful for everyone who put together the Ex-Mormon Conference, and I'm glad to be here. I'm a poor college student, but there's no price too high to pay, so came here, free drinks, it's all enjoyable, so it's worth it. And, you know, I just like to tell everyone that's, you know, perhaps looking forward to seeing other family members perhaps find what they've learned. You know, I didn't know my father was investigating. My father didn't know I was investigating, but we were all able to find the truth. And my father has been the greatest example to me by doing what he believes is true. And he's been a bigger example to me more than anyone, including Joseph Smith. So I like to say this in the name of whoever. Amen.
Sue was gracious enough to let me come back up, because in all my blubbering, I forgot to mention that you're all invited to my website, which is exmormononline.net. I came home last year inspired from the conference and started that social network strictly for ex-Mormons, so it's just a website out there for everybody that wants to find other friends, people in your area. You can share photos, videos, music, blogs, whatever you want. It's private, so you can only see it if you're logged in as a member. Thanks.
And if you'll notice, you probably all have on the programs this year, we listed a bunch of the websites that we felt would be most beneficial for those who are looking for either information or some social connection with other ex-Mormons, and a list of books. And I want to remind you again that everyone who is speaking this weekend who has written books, those books are on our website, and you can purchase them there. But this weekend you'll be able to purchase them directly from the authors and be able to get them to sign them. So that's just an extra little incentive to get them now. When we dismiss here, I want to remind you that the meeting with Richard about the temple ceremony will be in this room rather than upstairs like it's been in years past. So we will need, it would be good if we vacated, those who are not staying for that, if we vacated fairly quickly from here. And the hospitality room that's right next door is open, and it's full of drink and goodies. And if you haven't brought anything to contribute, we do have a donation jar in there just to help alleviate some of the costs. So if you feel like it, you can put some money in that. And so we will continue tomorrow morning. We really encourage you to be on time. Our schedule is always very full. And one of the things I'd like to point out is that we do, one of the reasons we put the full bios in our program that we do every year is because our, two reasons. One, we're not quite as formal as Sunstone Symposium and some of those where we have formal introductions to our speakers, but the information is in your program because it does save us quite a bit of time, and there's just great information there about all of the ones who are on the program this year. So we'll see you in the morning after. Don't stay up too late, so you'll be on time tomorrow. Okay. We'll wait 10 minutes before Richard's going to start.